Hey, this is Nate Chenin. You are listening to Jazz United, which is a brand new podcast. This is, in fact, the very first episode. I'm the editorial director at WBGO, and my co-host on Jazz United is Greg Bryant, host of Jazz After Hours. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited about this very first episode and psyched to be going on this journey with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man. You know, I read your work so much before coming up to the New York area to jump on as Jazz After Hours host here at WBGO. I thought when I got there, I've got to meet this guy, and we did. And you took me up on a hang offer.
Yeah, well, you know, we kind of just squeezed it in under the wire. I'm glad we managed to move on that before, you know, the world shut down. And we just talked about your experience coming up from Nashville. And, you know, I remember leaving that night and just feeling very energized.
Man, that's good to hear, because I felt the exact same way. I dug you right away, man. Your ear has always been to the street. And I think that's really important that we practice just integrating the historical context with what's going on now.
And the show's theme song is United, this Wayne Shorter composition. You heard it at the top of the show. And we chose it for a reason. You know, this is a tune that really expresses the ideals that we're reaching for here. This idea of coming together in dialogue from our, you know, respective positions and places, and really finding common ground.
Yeah, I really like that you chose that tune, Nate, to help with the concept of this show. So many renditions of that song have been done by a wide myriad of musicians. There's this historical connection going throughout that one tune that I think addresses kind of what we're doing here, you know, ancient to the future, the past as well as the present.
You know, you and I have so much to talk about. You know, there was a time when we might have talked about the pandemic and the fact that we're not hanging out in jazz clubs. There was a time when we might literally talk about our favorite Art Blakey records. But
right.
At this moment, there's really nothing more pressing and more top of mind for us than protests around Black Lives Matter and police treatment of people of color. Mm-hmm. So before we go further, man, I wanted to ask, like, these last few weeks, how have you been feeling about things? You know, how has this registered and resonated with you?
I've been finding a way to try to unstop myself. But the whole scene that's going on these days in the streets and the struggle for human rights has been a serious blow to my spirit. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about John Coltrane and one of his last interviews that he gave in 1966. The interviewer asked him, "What do you say to people who claim your music is too new, too difficult, too angry?" Coltrane paused, and his answer was, "Well, I feel that there are things in life that we just won't understand."
Hmm. Yeah.
And I've had to reflect over that fact. And I think that with human rights and the police brutality against African Americans and others, some people just don't get it, Nate. That's why we're still here. Mm-hmm. And if we're really honest about it, not much has really changed. So it's been a time for reflection. It's been a time for speaking up, speaking out. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity to talk with you, man, because I've had a difficult time knowing what to do next and how do we heal.
Yeah, I really feel that. You know, it's interesting the role that music plays in that experience, because I think for some people, this is a moment where music can be a salve and kind of an escape.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the music is really engaged with this struggle. You and I are both rooted in the music. And I think that, you know, if we let the music guide us, we'll be on firm and solid ground.
Absolutely.
You know, recently at WBGO, I put together an edition of our Monday Take Five playlist that was devoted entirely to music that speaks directly to this moment. There's one in particular that we talked about that you felt really spoke to you and your feelings. Can you illuminate us now?
Absolutely. We're talking about Mono Neon, the bassist, composer, sideman, and bandleader these days, a brand new single called Breathing While Black. And I was really attracted to this tune, Nate, because I feel that It's so plain spoken. If you know anything about Mono Neon, he's a very complex, technically virtuosic bass player. We've heard him with Ghost Note, we've heard him with David Fujinski, but he's paring down his ensemble in this track, and there's this driving rhythm and lyrics that are very much plain spoken, to the point. One of the lyrics simply says, "We are crying for help. Don't you see the problem all around? Do my tears have to be white for you to understand me?" Personally, as frustrating as it is, it's somewhat cathartic to be able to hear someone musically express just where I am with this. We need to deal with it, root it out, and move forward. And that's what I think Mono is trying to do with this track.
Let's hear a little bit of Breathing While Black. You know, this track joins quite a list of pieces that we've seen over the last 5-6 years or so that are really in line with the Black Lives Matter movement and that respond to this issue. You know, one thing that's been heartening to me in what I've observed, I mean, I'll speak from my personal experience. I was out at a protest recently in Beacon, New York, and I brought my children, and it was really important to me to have that conversation with them. You know, they're learning in school. They go to public school and they're learning about Rosa Parks. They're learning about, obviously, Martin Luther King.
Wonderful.
But, you know, to sit down and say, look, like those struggles that you have been reading about and making projects about, like that is happening right now and we can be a part of it and we should, you know?
Absolutely. You know, Nate, just like you brought up Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, and just like we're talking about people in the present like Terrace Martin and Mono Neon, they come from a history of musicians that have been active politically and also in their art. Another tune that I wanted to bring forward from a historical standpoint has to do with what happened in Arkansas in 1957 with the Little Rock Nine. There was a governor by the name of Orville Faubus who was resistant to the desegregation of schools, in specific Little Rock Central High School. And he had mobilized the Arkansas Army National Guard to prohibit these 9 African-American students for legally integrating this high school in 1957. This sent shockwaves throughout the entire country. And one gentleman, a triple threat, if I can call him that, Charles Mingus.
You can definitely call him that.
He wasn't having it. Mingus was in residence at this club called The Showplace. And one night he leaned over to his drummer and says, "Name me someone who's ridiculous, Danny." And spontaneously, Danny Richmond, the drummer, shouts out, "Orville Faubus," alluding to the incident in Arkansas that was going on. And Mingus dug that. Not only did he keep that piece in the band's book, but he began to write what I'm going to call the first diss record in improvisational music. He took it to Columbia Records, and the producer said, "Hey, man, I like the tune, but we're not going to record those lyrics. They're too volatile. They're too explicit. They're too inflammatory." And he relented because he wanted the piece documented. But not even a year after that, in 1960, Nat Hentoff, the great critic, was serving kind of a moonlighting situation as producer at a little-known label called Candid Records. He signed Mingus and allowed Mingus to record the tune with the full lyrics as well as the music. And we're talking about Fables of Faubus, or as it's known with lyrics, the original Faubus Fables.
You got it covered? All right. I'd like to continue this set with a composition dedicated to the first or second or third All-American heel, Faubus, and it's titled The Fables of Faubus. Oh, Lord, don't let him shoot us. Oh, Lord, don't let him stab us. Oh, Lord, don't let him torn feather us. Oh, Lord, no more swastikas.
So that was the original Faubus Fables by Charles Mingus. And, you know, I feel it's worth mentioning that in addition to this piece of music, that situation that you so elegantly laid out for us, it occasioned some real sharp critique from Louis Armstrong as well.
Right.
Armstrong pretty famously not only called out Faubus, he called out President Eisenhower. And he said, Eisenhower has no guts for letting Faubus, an uneducated plowboy, run the country. Now, you talk about the first diss track, that's some fire right there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so it's important to remember for all of us that jazz musicians have been out front, certainly on civil rights and race relations.
Yes, sir.
You know, since the very beginning of this music. As we were talking about antecedents, there's one that has been really heavily on my mind the last few weeks and really kind of the last few months. And that's Archie Shepp's album, Attica Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a relationship with this record?
You know, to be honest with you, Nate, I really don't. Some of my favorite Archie Shepp has been the albums he released previous to that. Fire Music being my favorite. And Live in San Francisco, but I had almost avoided Attica Blues in that the picture that Archie paints is so dynamic, so amazing, so inclusive. It's almost overwhelming at times from a musical perspective. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad you chose this because settling down and listening to this in full last night, not only was I now ready for it, it really hits in a different way that we're battling these same issues.
Yeah. I think maybe we want to just drop right into the music and then we can talk a little bit about some of the surrounding context because it's really pertinent, as you say. Why don't we hear how this album, which was released on Impulse in 1973, let's hear how it opens. One reason that this album's been on my mind, quite honestly, is that a while back, Pitchfork asked me to review it for their Sunday review. And so I spent quite a long time sitting with this album this year. And yet, no matter how many times I've heard it, the way that this album opens with that funk bass line and the gospel singers, and then Carl Hall, who's credited on the album by an alias,
right.
Henry Hull, he's singing high in his register, and the very first line is, I got a feeling that something ain't right, and I'm worried about the human soul.
Mm.
You know, Attica Blues is in response to this very specific situation, but this is the most generalized kind of cry that you can imagine. He's not saying I'm worried about black people. He's not saying I'm worried about police violence. I'm worried about the human soul.
Yes.
You know, that feels so relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the prison industrial complex. It has to do with the Black Power movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with a real sort of siege-like, militarized police assault
right.
that resulted in almost 40 people dying. And so it's really just a few months later that Archie Shepp brings this unusual, unwieldy, large ensemble with strings and gospel and funk musicians and improvisers like himself, and puts together this like sprawling, kind of messy tapestry of an album. But it really does have a focus, you know?
And I really like, number one, you mentioned the bass. Mm. One of my favorites, Gerald Jermont, on that first track. He played on a lot of Atlantic records. He serves most prolifically on the Aretha Franklin album, Live at Fillmore.
Which is just a stone classic, an incredible album.
Absolutely. And the drums there by Beaver Harris, I knew Beaver Harris more so as a free jazz drummer, somebody who could swing, but definitely dealt with the more multi-rhythmic palette a la Rashid Ali, for instance. But to hear him throwing down against Gerald Jermont's bass was just a real revelation. And Archie Shepp does something on this record that I think is very emblematic of his mastery of Black American music. He's got the protest, he's got the growl, he has the fire, but there's also a tenderness that you can really feel. It's just a smorgasbord of vibrations, but it helps to really focus it, Archie being the galvanizing force. Yeah, it's fiery, but it's still tender.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of a complex expression of protest. And what I mean by that is, it would be one thing if Archie Shepp came out with his horn blasting like a flamethrower and said, you know, this is my elegy for Attica.
Right.
And just like wailed.
Mm-hmm.
We can understand that viscerally. It really covers such a wide spectrum. That's another reason it really speaks to me right now. What I'm experiencing is this mix of fury and despair.
Yeah.
And then also like some kind of hope. And Greg, I'm wondering if you're getting that as well.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel hopeful as well, Nate, as the days roll on. And that kind of brings us to our next track that we wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Morgan Guerin, and it's a song that he wrote for his younger sister. It's called Abina. He's a name that I'm just now really getting around to, hearing him work with Tyshawn Sorey and seeing him just before he left Atlanta for New York, kind of watching him move around the city there with different ensembles. This young multi-instrumentalist is one to watch, and that he would compose a song like this at this time shows that it's more than music to him. He's really trying to connect socially to what's going on and help to affect that positive change with this very personal message that he's written in this song.
Why don't we hear some of this song, and then we can talk a little bit about Morgan and his relationship to the jazz continuum. So this is Abina, which is the first single from Morgan Guerin's forthcoming album, which he's titled The Saga 3.
Abina from multi-instrumentalist Morgan Guerin. It really strikes me from a musical perspective just how many young, phenomenal multi-instrumentalists are really coming onto the scene. It's almost like, You know, quarantine is not a distraction or a challenge to them at all. They can edit their own work. They can mix their own work. They play piano and keys. They play bass. They play horns. And they play them all at an equal level.
Right.
As you mentioned, actually, Nate, in Take 5, I heard some of the similar influences, that Inner Visions and Visions period of Stevie Wonder in the early 70s. And as we think about the word jazz, you know, love it or hate it, I think there's a new generation of musicians that are attacking it from the continuum of history. And as, you know, Black American music, they can integrate the sound of a Stevie Wonder with a John Coltrane and have it not be jerky or uneven, but somehow it all makes sense. And I think, again, that's what Archie Shepp was really getting at with that Attica Blues album. Now we hear this present attempt at the same thing, and the languages of these different, for lack of a better word, genres are really flowing in a way that would cause one sound rather than a bunch of tributaries.
Yeah, that's so well put. You know, one reason I wanted to bring us here to this song as we're kind of winding down here is that it is specifically a message to his younger sister. And he told me in an email that their age difference is about 20 years. So there's a real generational difference between them.
Right.
We think of Morgan as the kid, you know,
yeah,
he's,
right.
He's up and coming, but he's already thinking of himself as a African-American man in this country who can impart some wisdom to the next generation, you know?
Right.
One way you could look at that is that that is sort of a burden.
Right.
To be so young and to be thinking about that responsibility. There's another way to think of it, which is that it's a real awesome privilege.
That's right.
One of the things I love most about being a part of the jazz continuum is that that's kind of how it works.
That's it.
It's about taking the wisdom from your elders, from Max Roach and Charles Mingus and Louis Armstrong and Archie Shepp, and incorporating it and then passing it on to the next, you know?
Yes.
It's heartening to see that happening, mm-hmm. and it clearly needs to continue to happen.
I think you're on the money, Nate. I think Morgan Guerin is poised to show us how to integrate these languages in a way that will be a part of the continuum to help train younger musicians to say that, yeah, you can borrow from this over here, and that over there isn't off limits. It's all a part of this continuum. And in training folks, he's doing the work in addition to, you know, talking about it in these lyrics. Man, this has been fun. And I know you got a roll, but I can't wait to do the next one. I think this one this one has been a nice dip into the water, if you will.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of jam session rules, right? If you can't play Cherokee, don't get on the bandstand. So I think we just subjected ourselves to a nice little hazing here. But man, Greg, yeah, it's such a pleasure to connect with you. And I look forward to many more conversations, both on Jazz United and offline. So yeah, let's keep it moving.
That's a plan, Nate. That's a plan. We want to let the folks know that this podcast is a production of WBGO, hosted by Nate Chenin and yours truly, Greg Bryant. You can catch me on Jazz After Hours on WBGO FM and WBGO.org. You can catch Nate's writing on WBGO.org. The full songs from this episode today are also on our website. Our theme music is United, written by Newark Zone. Wayne Shorter, Sarah Kirsten is our producer. We'll catch you next time.